Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Welcome back, guys. Episode 71 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stofko.
71 sounds nice. How you doing, Tristan Cannell?
I'm doing really well, man. You?
Yeah, doing great. You know, just cruising through. It's a late night. I got to be real with the audience. What time is it?
It's close to 1 o'clock. We are doing a little bit of catch-up work tonight, but we've got a few special guests we have to get through, so we're pretty excited. But tonight we've got Bas Rudin.
Yeah, man.
So Bas is in the house, MMA legend, doing great things in the media world as well. So yeah. Excited to have him on.
Yeah, this is what you always talk about. This is what I always see from you and the successful ones talk about, that hustle and grind. And even though it's Friday night at 12:30 in the morning, we are bringing, you know, basically a guy that I've been listening to. I've watched him fight. You know, watch him go from, he was one of those rare guys who was on the peak of his career, world champion heavyweight, but also was doing, you know, being an analyst at the time when MMA was like in its infancy. So it would kind of be equivalent to see, like, you know, name a champion, Demetrius Johnson, or maybe like, you know, I guess Tyron Woodley's doing it, but Bas Rudin is like a super polarizing figure. And he's like synonymous with like aggression, but also like charisma and his character. I'm really excited to pick his brain on what he thinks about the modern day of the MMA.
Yeah, it's quite interesting you bring that up, because his physique's unbelievable. Like, even today, he's doing quite good shape. But in terms of a UFC heavyweight, you know, he really depicts and probably set the tone for the modern day big guy to really come through.
Yeah, what's your opinion though, like bringing up the heavyweight division in MMA, and like if you were to compare it into boxing too, is there a specific mold that you would say that would be like, you know, a cookie cutter cut out of what a heavyweight's supposed to look like, not only the body but also the style? What's that in your opinion?
Well, it's a little bit different, isn't it? Because I think UFC is a little bit hard to tell, because they let people like Brock Lesnar come in, and then at the same time you've got people like Mark Hunt. And if Mark Hunt was in the best shape of his life, he wouldn't be a heavyweight.
No, he's like my height. He'd probably
exactly
be...
Exactly right. He's shorter than you.
Maybe a middleweight.
Yeah, he could probably, if he realistically... I guess right now he probably couldn't, because he just loves his food too much, I'm assuming. Because unless he's got some sort of disorder, he shouldn't really be that weight at that height.
Yeah.
So, and then you've got people like Brock Lesnar, an obvious steroid taker.
Those Mexican supplements are real. Like, the thing about it is, though, man, I'm not going to hate on it, because we don't know who is taking and who isn't.
Yeah.
If it, like, they're like, oh, if it was an even playing field, let them all do it. But, like, it's just a known thing in the WWE.
Yeah, exactly right. But when you think about the hits they have to take 3 or 4 times a week.
Yeah.
You nearly want to do it to just preserve your muscle, right? Because your recovery just wouldn't happen.
But what if you were in a competitive field and your payroll and your family's livelihood was based on what you're making, and everybody around you was doing something and your like career dependent on you just surviving and competing? And if they're taking an enhancement, what's your headspace there? Like, where is that line drawn, like with integrity, your moral code, or survival?
Yeah, and UFC knew about it. That's probably the biggest disappointment. So, you know, at the end of the day, what is the moral code in the UFC? Because they set a pretty bad precedent for it.
Yeah, I mean, good or bad, Bas Rudin comes from a day, though, man. This guy was a pancreas champion, to where, like, the rules, you had to have open fists, so it was, like, slapping.
Yeah.
Before Bas, the slapping rule was just what you think, open hand, no fist. Bas comes along, follows the rules, but he evolved the movement by using his palm.
Yeah,
so
I've seen it.
The
yeah.
palm strike. He was knocking guys out with palm strikes, and I've heard Bas, so he hosts a few different shows. He's all in the MMA scene. He's a legend. I mean, his nickname's El Guapo. Very, when he was in his prime, very good looking, total yeah. package type of dude. And I've heard him talk about the palm strike in a fight is just as dangerous as a fist. And, you know, open my hand and looking at it right now, you know, I want to see if that's his true belief system, if he would actually use that as like an attack or a weapon in a fight.
Yeah, definitely. I think he would have actually, you know, thrived in today's world when social media can boost the profiles. You know, he's, like you said, a very, very good looking man, charisma, speaks very well. So he would have actually been very, very successful in today's world.
I mean, he's doing it right now, though. I mean, he's invented, I think it's called the O2 trainer. I know he's had his battles with asthma. It's basically, he said also on the record that it's scientifically proven to not only help with asthma, but there's been like cases where people have used this little device in their training, I think specifically fighters, and their asthma has gone away. But he's also, you know, the analyzing aspect of the game, but coaching too, like the mentoring side is what really interests me. Bang Ludwig is one of the guys that's like in his stable, and you know, it's just gonna be interesting to pick his brain on this.
Yeah, definitely. Before we get into the show, guys, just remember to check out On It. It's on our website, so www.thevisionboardpodcast.com/on it. Use checkout code VISIONBOARD at checkout. And also, just remember to get your free ebook. We've created an abs ebook on the website as well. So, Johnny, where can they get that from, man?
Yeah, just go to our website, www.thevisionboardpodcast.com/ebook.
Definitely, guys. It's if you've seen us with our shirts off. We've got those little abs happening.
Oh, no. Yeah, the summer's here, guys.
Summer's happening.
Seriously, other than the aesthetics, it'll put you in a good mindset. It's not easy to do this whole like fitness and well-being thing, but what we're going to do is give you this guide for free. Give you kind of like a basis of what to do, an outline, hold you accountable. Take 10 seconds, go to our website, put your email in. We'll send it right to your inbox.
Definitely, guys. So check that out. But yeah, let's get Bas on. He's waiting.
El Guapo.
Our special guest is MMA legend and former UFC heavyweight champion, Bas Rutten. He currently is the co-host of Inside MMA and hosts a podcast with Mauro Ranallo. We welcome Bas Rutten. Bas, welcome to the show, my man.
You're very welcome. Welcome, guys. So how's everybody? How's life there in... you guys have... Oh, summertime now, right?
It's just going into in spring, Bas. So it's a nice spring day. We're in October. It's beautiful.
Yeah, Sydney, Australia, this time of the year is a place to be.
I know. I've been there in September. I was there preparing a long time ago, 96, for my world title fight against Funaki. Since you guys have only 1 hour time difference with Japan, I thought I'd go there, train with Larry Papadopoulos.
There you go. Boss, man, you're a busy guy. I want to start the show off a little bit about, I recently saw you with our boy, a fellow Vision Board podcast alum, Rich Franklin, doing your thing with 1FC. You were in LA on the Rogan podcast. Where are you currently now? What's going on in Bas Rutten's world?
Oh, man, I've been so crazy busy. I just came out of a 2.5 hour meeting, and it was all technology. So it was, my brain is frozen right now. And then I had to hurry because I realized I had this podcast, but it was traffic, so I'm flying through it. And now I'm at Mauro Ranallo's place where we shoot right after you guys interview. We shoot the Rutten and Ranallo podcast.
Awesome. What's happening on the podcast today?
Nothing. It's just us. And tomorrow is going to have an interview, but I don't have time. I'm having a premiere for a movie I did in Tennessee. So I got to go to Memphis, Tennessee, and check it out over there, which I'm actually looking forward to. So, but all the work that I had tomorrow, I had to pop it in today, so that's why it was such a crazy day.
Boss, what movie did you film?
It's called The River Thief. It's a movie. It's not a big movie, but I think it came out pretty good. And it's just a fun little thing. It's going to be in Joel Courtney. Yeah, I don't know if you saw, what was that movie? I know, I'm going to have to look that up. He did a movie with a director from Steven Spielberg, a good friend of his. It's kind of an E.T. kind of movie. I can't come up with the name. It'll pop up in a little bit as soon as I don't think about it. It always works like that. But The River Thief is going to be in theaters this upcoming weekend. And it's fun. I'm a bad guy actually in this one. So I'm not a nice guy. I'm kind of a killer.
So you're not El Guapo. You're not the pretty boy anymore.
No, that's it. No, you should see the way I look. It's pretty funny.
El Machina.
Yeah. Hey, Buzz, looking forward to see the movie. See how it came out.
Yeah, Buzz. I'm really intrigued about how you and Mauro actually met because you've got such a great dynamic. Obviously, one. He's an expert kind of media star, and then yourself, both media and your background in fighting. So can you just let us know just kind of how you guys met and just your little dynamic that you guys got going?
I did this. I was working on a TV show in Vancouver a while ago, This is in 99, I think. And they asked me if I wanted to do this really bad movie thing. And I go, you know, it's kind of fun. I didn't know it was going to be real bad. Actually, the movie never got made later on. But what they wanted to do is, I was going to meet this guy who was going to be a my commentating partner, which was Mauro, actually. And we were going to talk about a fight that wasn't filmed yet. Can you imagine that? They said, oh, no, we're going to build a fight around the way you guys talk. I said, that's never going to happen. There's no way you guys can do that. I said, but hey, if you pay me for it, I'll do it real there. So that's where I met Mauro. And we had bought a six-page script that we had to memorize pretty much. And then Mauro comes in. And he starts reading the script, and he's just flapping through it, you know, like a minute and a half. And he goes, okay, so when do we shoot? And I go, no way. I said, what? I said, you got it? And he said, yeah. I said, there's no way. So I start reading the lines with him, and he knew every freaking line. And I go, man, this guy's crazy. And his voice, I go, man. So once we started, it became this one big laugh fest there, because right away we start hitting it off. We start ad-libbing, and it became a very fun experience. So I asked him for his number. And I said, you know, maybe in the future, you never know, if they need a commentator somewhere. Now, 4 years later, they didn't want to work with Stephen Quatros anymore. And they asked me for if I knew a good commentator. I didn't want to mention the name yet, because I felt, you know, Stephen is a friend of mine, and maybe he would think, you know, that all these crazy things go through your head, that he might think that I set that up, you know, because Mauro is a friend. And, you know, but so I waited. And they had Damon Perry. They didn't like him. They asked me again. I said, actually, I do have a guy, but I hope his number is still the same. And I left a message on his voicemail. He sent in a tape, and that was it. We arrived in Japan, and that's where we hit it off.
Awesome. I was actually going to ask you a little bit of advice just before we keep moving on, just from me and Johnny, because me and Johnny's been doing the podcast for about 11 months. We've known each other for a couple of years, and we're getting better and better at kind of interacting and not stepping on each other's toes during interviews and things like that. So I just wanted to ask you, with you and Mauro, was it like it just naturally happens over time that you get more comfortable in each other's shoes, or is there something that you're, you know, doing in preparation that just helped you to have a better dynamic on air?
Okay, we're going to try. No, it was instantly. It was instantaneously when we already met the first time on a bad movie set, so to say. We just hit it off. It was something that, you know, It was just a great experience. I thought, what a talent. We had a lot of jokes. We liked each other's jokes, which is normally, you know, with my kind of jokes, I have a little sick humor. But he was cut out of the same cloth, I guess. And so, yeah, it was there right away. It's really funny how that went.
Boss, you were the king of pancreas, UFC champ. You're actually one of these rare breeds of an athlete who retired on a win streak. Was calling it quits difficult for you? Was it because of an injury? Was it a family decision? What was the thought process going into that?
It was all because of injuries. I got tore up. I had everything, you know. I tore up biceps and my knee started hurting, and I had tendonitis in both my arms, and you know, everything starts stacking up. So, you know, I figured it was time for me to call it quits. And, you know, I went out on a huge winning streak. So I figured, you know, if there's a time to quit, this will be the perfect time. But it was a nightmare. You know, I could not train anymore. I could train for 45 minutes. That's when my tendonitis would hit the pain for some reason. And then I will be an hour and a half, an intense, like in pain unlike any other pain. So training became a drag, you know, didn't become fun anymore. I lost weight because I couldn't eat from the pain. It was not fun anymore. So it came at the right time, though. You know, I mean, 22 fights I didn't lose. So I figured if I go out, there will be a great moment.
Now, switching gears from when you were an athlete to when you were a fighter to when you were a coach, Tristan and I are both coaches down here in Sydney. And the reverence of, like, when a student, how a student holds you. Well, I'll use Joe Schilling, for instance, how he talks about you in such high regards. Is there any specific thing that you were able to take from your fighting career that you do differently with your students, that you feel that you learn from your mistakes, in a sense, that you can identify now and do things a little differently in the training aspect with your fighters?
You know, I let him wrestle with wrestlers. You know, I never had wrestling in Holland. It's very hard to find. If you have like three wrestling gyms in Holland, that would be a lot. That's why I figured, you know, I have to go down, because then if they take me to the ground, I can try to reverse them and submit them. You know, if you look at my record when he did the Hall of Fame stats, you know, it was actually fun to read, because I won 14 fights by submission, but I never attempted a single takedown. So that meant that they took me down, and then I was able to lock them up. So, you know, I would say now to my students, I say, you know, I bring in wrestlers for them so they can work with wrestlers, because that was the one thing that I never was good at. You know, they could take me down, and that was okay in Pancras and in the UFC in the early days, but now with everything, I would say, you know, it's a very important part of mixed martial arts, pretty much the most important.
Boss, did you catch that? There was a segment on a recent fighter and the kid. It was a Hollywood actor, and he's an actor for a reason, but his name was Ed O'Neill, and he was talking about the proper way to throw a punch. Now, I like your philosophy. I've heard you speak openly a couple different times on, correct me if I'm wrong, about when you throw a punch, you not necessarily have to even make a fist. Is that correct?
Oh, no, palm strikes, of course, that would be great, but a close face, if you fight a close face, you're going to have to squeeze it really hard, but I'm not a believer in...
Yes, so, what? It depends, but if I would like to give a left hook right straight to somebody's head, and imagine I connect with the left hook, and are you still there?
Yeah.
Are you guys still? Okay, good, okay, and because I heard a weird noise again. Yeah. If I make a left hook, and I connect with the left hook, and the person does not move backwards, if I would throw a right straight at that moment, it would make no sense to me. A right elbow would be better, because that will have more power on it, since I cannot extend my arm. You know, now, if I make a palm strike with the left, I can actually stretch my arm way longer. So, first of all, I have more reach on it, but then the second punch, the right straight punch, will have more power, because it has more distance, so I can travel more, and in that space, of course, it can develop more power and speed. So that's why I like to throw a palm strike here and there. But also palm strikes, I kind of throw with the bony part of the wrist, and I try to aim behind the ear. You know, it's a way better target than to hit the jaw, because behind the ear, nobody's ready for that kind of impact. You know, you can always, I tell people in interview, with your palm, if you go to the back of your head and behind your ear, you just give yourself some soft punches, you feel right away that your equilibrium gets really shaken up, instead of getting it on the front of the jaw. So that's why I like it. But also with other punches, in boxing, they teach you to rotate your fist at the end of the punch, you know. It's not necessary at all. For me, it's telegraphing. Because everybody, if you do it correctly, but they don't do it. What happens is, as soon as they punch, if I tell somebody, okay, you got to twist your hand at the end, they already start doing it in the beginning of the punch. So if you look at the fighter and you stare at his chest, so to say, and you see his elbow move up outward a little bit, you know he's going to punch. It's like telegraphing. He's telling me when he's punching. And that's why I don't like it. I just like to go straight, keep the elbows low. Don't bring the elbows up. Keep the elbows low and just make a straight punch. And it's really funny, because the person who really started with that saying, that was Muhammad Ali. He said, you know, you have to twist at the end for more impact. Yet when you see him fight, he's not doing it. You see, so I go like, nah, I don't like it. Just punch, you know, it's a straight punch. What can go wrong with that? As long as you hit really hard and you push up on your back leg, you know, you should be good to go. No need for that twisting thing at the end that supposedly puts more power in the punch.
Definitely. Hey, Buzz, with you being UFC heavyweight champ, obviously you dominated all around the world. What separated you as a champion from someone that was just a contender?
I don't know. You know, I think that all came from my from when I was young, with my skin disease and my severe asthma attacks, you know. So, if, for instance, I couldn't breathe. If I had an asthma attack for a week, that means I couldn't eat for a week because I couldn't breathe, you know. And then you tried to go to the restroom, and my restroom was one flight of stairs down. That was going to take 45 minutes for me. You know, 20 minutes to go down, then pee, and then I had to go back up again, but which is way harder because, you know, try to walk up a stairs. I had to do two steps, sit down, rest. Two steps, sit down, rest, you know. And once you have that a lot of times a year, you know, you train yourself. Well, you're going to have to do it. I mean, you're going to have to pee, right? Or you're going to have to go take a dump, so to say. You're going to have to move to that toilet. So I think that's where it all started, that I really, you know, that I if I wanted something, I simply had to work for it.
And how did you get over that condition?
No, the asthma attacks started going away around 17, 18 years of age. And then, but I still had asthma. I had to carry an inhaler with me everywhere I went. Even for my world title, every single fight I had in my life, I had to use an inhaler in the dressing room to open my lungs. You know, it's exercise-induced. Every asthma patient has that. Like, for instance, if I would take a sprint for 100 meters, after that, I would be okay. 2 minutes later, my lungs will be closed. And that's with a lot of asthma patients. Or if I sneeze really violently, like three times, my lungs would close. I have to spray them open with albuterol. Now, once they're open, then I can go. So once in the dressing room, once I spray my lungs open, I'm good for hours. Then it's not going to be a problem anymore. But you want to make sure that that happens in the dressing room, because if that would happen in a fight, that is catastrophic.
Yeah, boss, a good friend of mine, she fights in the strawweight division of the UFC, and depending on what country or city she's fighting in, they won't allow her to use her inhaler. She has asthma as well. So my question is, from where the fight game is today with things like being regulated state by state and where it was during your day, could you talk a little bit about some of the parallels and some of the ways you think the sport is maybe not going in the right path and where it is evolving?
Yeah, that is not going in the right path. I think they should be able to allow to do in the dressing room. And otherwise, I just tell her, you know, I put it in your pants, go to the restroom, you know, while you're there, where there's no athletic commission, and just do it. I mean, what are they going to do? I mean, they want you to fight, right? It's stupid. I mean, if these people would understand what asthma is, then they understand also that they're going to have to need to do it. It doesn't have to do anything with stamina. It's just your lungs that close for a moment, and if you open them up, you're good to go. So allow them to do that. I can understand, though, that you cannot do it at ringside. I would always have an inhaler with me in pancreas at ringside. Well, my manager would have, because I didn't have a coach. I just had my manager there. And if it would happen, it never happened. But, you know, just to, you know, for peace of mind, he would be there and he would have it. And I'm pretty sure that if I would have said, hey, time out, you know, or they would break or something, and then I could take a spray real fast, they would have allowed me. I think that should be allowed, not during the fight, though, like I just talked about, but in the dressing room for sure. So they're going to have to fix that rule. The other rule, what I didn't like with the IVs, you know, the IVs are okay to take them out. But, you know, like BJ Penn, when he got caught with an IV during training camp, I think that is really pushing it, you know. I think it's not going to, you know, it's just going to replenish him better because he's already an older person. Let him use an IV. As long as they don't do it for weight cutting or after weight cutting, then it should be okay. I would like also instant replay, which they have a lot now, you know, but where they actually can change the fight. You know, with Barão and Uriah Faber, I always use that example. You know, he gave a thumbs up to the referee, yeah, that he was okay. Yeah. But, you know, the referee is just human, and he was not standing at the right moment at the space where he could see that thumb go up, so he stopped the fight. Now, with instant replay, they could have said, oh, wait a minute, he put his thumb up. Oh, yeah, I missed that. Let's restart him in the same position, you know, and then continue the fight. I would like to see that as well.
Boss, a fight that really sticks in the front of my mind is, within the last year, the Bisping and Anderson Silva fight. What's your opinion on that when Michael caught that knee and it looked to me that he was out cold, and Herb Dean, because Anderson walks away, didn't call it the fight and then went on, and we all know how it ends. Michael won a split. What's your opinion on how that should have ended, and did it end correctly?
Yeah, I think it ended correctly because he's doing a timeout motion. Now, and some fighters, like with me, if a fighter does a timeout motion, I know something is wrong. I would step backwards, you know. But a lot of fighters say, hey, I'm here to fight. So, and they're right, you know. They just attacked, and that's when he flew in with that knee. He caught him off guard. And I think that, you know, Bisping had some big punches in the past where he recouped from. And you have to understand that referees really look into the history of a fighter as well. You know, if a fighter gets hit and he's out right away and he won't stand up, I'm not talking about that big punch with Dan Henderson, of course, that in the first time when they met, because that was called out knockout. But I mean, if he over a period of time, every time when he got a big hit, he recouped from that, I think a referee knows that, and they give him a little extra chance.
Yeah. While we're on Michael Bisping, let's talk about that little April Fool's joke that you played on MMA Live. It was brilliant.
how funny was that, right? I knew, you know, we, what happened was we did April Fool's Day day before, but it was not really, the Friday was not April Fool's, because we were shooting the show live on Fridays. But then I looked up in my calendar and I go, oh man, next year Friday is going to be it's going to be April Fool's. So I'm going to have to do it. And the first guy that popped up, because I know him, is Michael Bisping. And I wanted to do it for real. I thought, you know what, I'm going to do it for real. But knowing Mike, he's going to really go to town then. So later on I go, you know what, maybe I should give him a heads up what we're going to do. You know, because otherwise he might think it's real and he goes over the top. You don't know what's going to happen. So I called him and I said, listen, I want to do this. I said, build it up slowly. You know, don't get angry right away. Just start, you know, start talking back, and we go slowly but surely. We build it up, and then it's going to look good. People are going to fall for it. And man, the reactions online were crazy. Like, a lot of people started tweeting. My tweet lit up like the 4th of July, and it was, all people thought that I was in the fight with Michael Bisping. Yeah. It was hilarious.
Yeah, I definitely fooled.
I fell for it, for sure.
Boss, in regards to mentoring and coaching, could you talk a little bit about, like, the influence? Are you, I know when we're in the moment, whenever, whatever our careers are, we kind of just, I don't want to say take it for granted, but are you aware of the impact you have on, like, your students? And that being said, talk about how you hold yourself in regards to, like, you know, keeping self-integrity and being aware that you are somebody people look up to.
You know, yeah, I never had that. I think I always, and that was maybe one of my things also in fighting, I always thought I was not good enough, you know, but that would always make me push harder and harder and harder. It was, for instance, in Pancras one time, that was after like 2 years, once I started rolling on the ground and really started focusing on the ground game, I was training with all the fighters. And that was the first time when I came home. And I told my wife, I say, you know what, I truly believe I can be a world champion in this, because I didn't think I was that good on the ground, but it was just because I had nobody to train with. I had one guy I trained with, so I couldn't really tell. I was submitting people in Pancras, but, you know, with the big guys, and I thought, oh, these guys are doing it much longer than I do. Once I started rolling with them, I go, like, wait a minute, this is actually, you know, this, I'm actually doing really well. So that was the moment that I said, oh, okay, I can do it. And once you have that focus, and you do that realization, then you automatically get even better, because now it starts to get really interesting. Wait a minute, if I can do that to them, okay, let's push it a little harder now and see where I can really bring this thing. That's why I'm always say I'm so proud of my record, you know, because I went in as a striker, but if you look at my record, I actually have more submission victories than I have knockouts. So I always been proud of that.
With your experience and you being a champion, are you able to identify, like, when you're watching the fights, maybe a young fighter who just hasn't been able to cross that boundary yet to becoming a world champ, are you able to watch the fighters and be able to see, hey, this guy has what it takes, he just doesn't believe in himself yet? And if so, who are some of those guys that the public have yet to see become a champ that you feel one day will be a champ?
You know, there's a lot of guys, but there's guys that come in and they have all the talent. And then after the first fight, well, the first fight is always a nightmare. That was my nightmare, not in MMA, but in Thai boxing. I remember it's chaos in the head. You know, it's so much to think about, and the audience is screaming. You don't know how to focus. And every fighter will tell you that he pretty much has the same. There's a few exceptions to that rule, but it's the trick is, of course, to fight like you do in the dojo. And if you can bring that same game under pressure to the ring or to the cage, you know, and if you can do that, if you succeed at that, then you're going to become a good fighter. So you figure that out in most of the time in the first three fights. Now, there's exceptions. There's kids who walk in and they're very calm. They're the opposite of me. They're very calm, very relaxed. And when you see them train, everything is calculated. With those kids, I pretty much know right away, okay, they're going to go really far. Because if they pick up fast and I see them being very technical and that calmness that they have, you know, they bring that to the fight, you know. But guys who are, you know, type A, always pushing, you know, like me, always on, always pushing the fight, that's, for us, it's harder to control our minds, because we want to do everything at the same time, which is a very bad thing to do, of course. But yeah, you figure it only out, you know, they're technically correct, but then can they do it under pressure? The example a friend of mine always used, imagine you have a plank, a board, which is like 1 foot wide and 20 foot long. you know, and you put it on the grass and you start, they tell you, okay, walk to the other side of the board. Everybody can do that. No, you put that same plank and you put it in between two buildings, like 13 stories up. Now it becomes a whole different ball game, and you have to see fighting like that. You know, for the people who train, they go like, oh, this guy should have done this, he should have done that. No. Before you say something, you should do it. And see if you can actually do it. Yeah, but I'm training, I know what I can do. That doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. If you're a great fighter in the dojo, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't automatically mean that you're a great fighter under pressure. That's where the real test is. It's, again, with basketball, you know. Kobe Bryant shoots every single goal. But now, if it's at the end of the game and he has to shoot one goal, and if he lands it, they win, and if he misses, then they're going to lose. Now there's a lot of pressure, and a lot of guys buckle under that pressure.
Yeah,
and that's the same thing in fighting.
Buzz, what was it like to train the late, great Kimbo Slice?
Well, I'm sorry, one more time?
What was it like when you trained Kimbo Slice?
Oh, Kimbo was great, you know, and especially in the beginning. You have to understand that Kimbo was picking up really, really fast. You know, people go like, you know, yeah, but he was never a real fighter. Guys, give the guy a break. He was doing well. Like after the Thompson fight, you know, he did a few backdoor escapes that we worked on the time before. And I was, you know, I was already raving about that. Just that, I already, you know, we won because he did that. That means he was listening and he was absorbing. But what with Kimbo happened as well is that, you know, he started getting knee injuries. We needed to shoot his knees all the time up. You know, and I know with a fighter that starts getting inside your head, you know, and then slowly but surely. And, of course, if once everybody starts telling you you're the champ, you're the champ. Sometimes, you know, with his friends, they would call him a champ. And I said, don't do that. So why not? I say, don't put him on as high as he's not is right now, because then he gets too comfortable. We don't want to have that right now. He needs to be comfortable, but he cannot be cocky, you know. So Kimbo was always great with that. I truly believe it was the injuries. Once we had to start working around those injuries, you know, that became a problem. Later on, you know, when he started boxing a little bit more and then returned to MMA, his knees were doing better, although I never really know because he was training at American Top Team. Maybe he had that problem there as well, but at least there, rolling with these guys, I assume that his knees were better, because rolling is most of the time the worst thing for your knee.
Boss, when we put up on our social media accounts that we were going to have an opportunity to talk to you, we were getting questions in from all directions. I know your time's limited, so I'm gonna shoot you one, and it's actually from my girlfriend. She's a big fan of El Guapo. She wants to know, with all of your accomplishments, where you are today, what you've achieved, what is the definition in Boss Rutan's head of what a meaningful life is? What does it mean to you?
A meaningful life is when I pass away, that everybody always would say, you know what, that guy could fight, but he was a good dude, you know. He was just a good guy, a good human being. Just be a good human being. Why do you have to be nasty to your fans or you know, to other fighters? Just be a good person, you know. And if you never lose that, I think that's the most important thing in fighting. Fighting is just a phase in your life. You know, after that, people are going to remember you, you know. How do you want to be remembered? That's the line I actually always use with my fighters. I said, and I believe Henry Ford made up that line. If you tell to a fighter, how do you want to be remembered? You want to be remembered as the guy with all the talent, but he didn't have the fire to train really hard, so he would always run out of gas, and that would be the reason he lost. You want to be the guy who cheated. Or do you want to be that guy? And even when you don't become a world champion, there's a whole bunch of fighters out there in the UFC and Bellator who probably never become a world champion, but who all the other fighters are afraid to fight. They know that if they fight that person, they're going to be in for a real fight. You know, and if as a fighter, if you have other fighters, your peers, talking about you, that is cool, in a good way, of course. Once, because that's where they don't lie. If they say, oh, no, he wasn't that good, that would hurt. But once you hear other fighters talking about another fighter, and they say, oh, man, this guy, like Dan Anderson, you know, the man's man, I always call him. I mean, this guy, great guy, inside, outside the cage, and if somebody's got heart, I mean, it's that guy. Now, Bisping also, this last fight, when he got dropped twice,
yeah.
You know, that for me is way more worth than the way he handles him outside the fighting game, which I personally believe is totally, totally acceptable. I never saw what other people see. I always thought that he was a great guy. Actually, was rooting for him when he did the Ultimate Fighter, because the Ultimate Fighter season ended just before my last fight. And what happened was, in 2006, I was in a different house because I had so many injuries. I was really not a nice guy in the house. Not a nice guy. I just couldn't be nice. You know, so I was in the house treating my injuries in a different house. And in the morning I woke up. I didn't have to train. So I was, what they did on Spike, they did the entire season in one day. And at the end, the final show was going to be live. And that's where I fell in love with Bisping. I thought he was a great guy, and also the way he presented himself.
Buzz, I just want to get your opinion on a couple of fights coming up. We've got the big card UFC 205. Just want to get an awesome opinion from you. So three fights I want to get opinion on. Conor McGregor versus Eddie Alvarez, Tyron Woodley versus Stephen Thompson, and Yoel Romero versus Chris Weidman.
Yeah, that's got to be something, right? So, I think first of all, which one are we wanted to? Alvarez McGregor, right? Let's start with that one. Okay, this is a fight, and we know this now, for McGregor. I love McGregor, man. He's a great fighter. I love what he brings to the sport. I love everything about him, because I know he's a complete different person also about the persona that he portrays himself to be. So he's a family man. He's a good dude. And Eddie Alvarez, same thing. I know Eddie for such a long time because he used to fight in Japan as well, where we did the commentating. Now, Eddie has been in the game for a long time. He has like 8 fights more or something like that, I guess. But what he brings is tenacity, and he's that in-your-face fighting. Like a Rafael Dos Anjos does the same thing. He will come forward. Now, if he's going to get hit in the first 2 rounds and McGregor can connect with one of those big shots, that could be trouble. But everything that starts happening after the second round, and especially when Alvarez is pushing the whole time, pushing him up against the fence, hitting, trying to go for the takedown, ground and pound, make it a grinder. You know, get him tired, because we know by now that he's really good in the first 2 rounds, but then stamina starts kicking in. Really focused solely on stamina right now. Conor needs to, because if it goes into the later rounds, and especially into the championship rounds, I see it going to Alvarez. So I believe that, and don't get me wrong, Alvarez can knock him out as well. You never know that. But, you know, realistically, I would say if it's going to be ended in the first 2 rounds, then probably McGregor nails one. And if it goes to a decision, I think Alvarez is going to take it.
Awesome. And the next one, Tyron Woodley and Wonderboy.
That's the thing, you know, what can Woodley do to overcome that big gap in between them? Because Thompson is so good at keeping his opponent at distance. The great thing that Woodley has is very explosive. You know, is it going to be a takedown or is it going to be a big strike? And with him, it's like he's powerful in all his strikes and in his hands. Right, left, uppercuts, everything that he throws is hard. So he's dangerous everywhere. He just needs to get that defense up from Thompson with a big strike or maybe even a combination, and then he's going to need to shoot and take him down. Because against Thompson, you don't want to stand with this guy. You know, even training shot for shot, I would never do that. Thompson is just too good at that. Look at what he did against Hendricks. I mean, he just dismantled him. Had absolutely no chance. It was the craziest thing. And it's all about distance. He needs to fight inside the reach of Thompson. And Thompson's going to need to keep him on the outside, of course. And he's really good with that, with the side kicks, with the front kicks, with the long reach that he has. So that's the thing. If Woodley can finally clinch, I would start hanging on his neck. I wouldn't even try to go for a takedown. Once there's a clinch, start neck wrestling, you know, like a tight clinch, and make that head move left and right, then forward, left and right, then forward. Start pumping like that acid in that upper body from Stephen Thompson, so he starts slowing down in his strikes. And if he can do that also with his legs, yeah, that would be something. But for that, he needs to take him down, have him at least in the guard, so he starts flexing his legs a lot. It's these fights, all these 3 fights, actually, the main events, Simas Dracik and Kovalkiewicz, they're very close. These are very close fights. I think Jay Dracik is going to win that fight because there's just the tenacity that she has. I'm a big fan of her as well. I mean, the way she fights and presents herself and how she gets in the head of the opponent, I think it's a great thing that she does. Kovalkiewicz is actually, you know, if you look at the records, I found out because we were talking about it on Inside MMA a couple of weeks ago, Kovalkiewicz got submitted in the amateur division by Jade Dracik. Her last fight that she did at amateurs, I believe, that was a loss against Joanna Jade Dracik. So, you know, that being in the head, that maybe can do something. But well, look at the fighter here, was 10-0, so she never had a, you know, never had a problem. So she's probably mentally very strong as well.
Yeah. Boss Rutan, we know your time is limited. Before we let you go, we have one question to ask you. We ask all of our guests. Boss Rutan, you're going to have a dinner party. You get to invite 5 people. These people could be dead or alive. They just can't be family or friends. Who is Boss Rutan inviting?
Oh, Jesus. Meaning Jesus?
Okay. We didn't know if that was a guess or if that was an expression.
No, that's really Jesus. I would love to talk to him.
Okay.
Bruce Lee, by far, you know, I need to have him as well there. Oh man, this is, it's, you know, if I think about it, most of the time it's going to be people like that, you know, like John F. Kennedy, but how cool would that be to hear, hey, were these tapes real? You know,
I would love... Did we go to the moon?
Oh man, I got 2 more. This is crazy. That's a hard question. I would have, I forget now, what is it? The movie, Inglourious Basterds, the director, I have space on his name right
Tarantino?
Now. Tarantino, of course, Quentin Tarantino, I would love to have him there, and talk to him, and then just, for all measures, yeah, I know this is going to be hard, because there's a bunch of friends of mine are up there right now as well, like, have Sean Tompkins and Kevin Randleman back, you know, one time, and to talk to these guys, great to.
Yeah, man, Randleman was a legend.
Awesome.
Yes.
Boss, thanks so much for your time. Before you leave, I'm sure everyone already knows where to check you out, but just for your social media channels and also for your podcast, just do a little shout-out, man.
All right. Rutan Ambrinello, spelled out all the way, .com. There you can all find all the platforms for our podcast, the Rutan Ambrinello Show, we call it for fun. Facebook.com/BossRutan, that's my Facebook, and on Twitter, BossRutanMMA, which has the same handle. It's my Instagram as well. I do more on Twitter, but I'm the kind of guy who answers questions more than I really post things. You know, so if people ask questions, that I respond to that instead of posting a lot of stuff. So that's pretty much it. Check out the O2 Trainer, long training device. Your friend you were talking about, the featherweight girl. I'm out of O2 Trainers right now, but if you guys contact me, I can send her an O2 Trainer, which will make her get rid of that asthma, because my asthma is cured because of my own O2 Trainer, and so is it. The same with many other fighters. It's actually proven now in medical journals that it will do that. So, if you can get me the name, and if you can get me the name in a month or so, then I should have a whole new stock of O2 trainers in.
I'll do that, boss. It's Alex Chambers, Astro Girl, first Australian female to ever fight in the UFC. So I'll let her know, the O2 trainer. I'll send you her info.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
All right, man. You're a legend, man. You have a good day. Thanks for coming on the show.
No, thank you very much, guys. Had a lot of fun. Thanks.
Thanks, boss. Talk soon.
What boss said about the mentoring and the coaching question when we asked him about what he tells his fighters is how you want to be remembered. That reminds me a lot of a quote Maya Angelou, a really famous one she has, and she says, people will never remember the words you tell them, but they'll always remember how you make them feel. And there's a lot of parallels with that whole thing about how you carry yourself, whether it's your business, relationships, or, you know, your day-to-day life. It's really important to be aware of that.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, from those two, both from what we just spoke with Buzz and also what you just mentioned as well, I think it's critical that, you know, to learn, you kind of let the other person speak a lot more. You know what I mean? Like, you can't really learn if you're always talking. That's a big critical thing for me. And I think that's kind of what you just said is trying to come across is, do you know what I mean? You don't have to be the flashy person all the time. Educating is about bringing it in. Do you know what I mean? At the same time as teaching, you know, that respect level that those two have got has probably come from the fact that they give people the due course to actually teach them something.
An awesome saying we used to have in leadership back in Vegas was, the best leaders lead with their ears. It's not going to be this militant type. You don't want to force people to follow you. You want to be beloved. And those leaders of the past, people always bring up Winston Churchill on the show. People always talk about, like, you know, your coaches that, like, guys, if you haven't listened yet, go to Joe Rogan's podcast when he was interviewing Joe Schilling and Bang Ludwig. Yeah, no, my bad. It was Bang Ludwig and I got mixed up in the interview. with Boss. It was actually Bang Ludwig and TJ Dillashaw.
Dillashaw, yeah.
Yeah, that's who it was. And I guess the how that hierarchy went down was Boss Rutan was coaching Bang when Bang was fighting, and then Bang was in turn taking what he learned, and he is obviously TJ's coach. And at one time, TJ was in Camp Team Alpha Male with Uriah Faber, and actually was so revered by what Bang was teaching him, and look, left that whole camp. There were some big issues with that. But if you haven't seen that episode, Boss comes in halfway through the podcast and just watch. Bang Ludwig is a 40-year-old savage. The dude is one of the highest-level Muay Thai fighters in the world. He's fought in the UFC before. Mm. And when Boss walked in the room, it was like Bang was like 11 years old.
Because he's coaching people too now, right?
Yes, yes. And it was like to see that reverence that Rutan commands. Obviously, he's not forcing that on anyone.
Yeah,
you know, it's all
actions
about
actions speak louder than words, my friend.
Definitely,
and that's huge for those guys. Hey, let's. I just want to get your opinion actually on these fights. I never got to ask you. I know you're very much into UFC. Conor and Eddie, you make some really good points about the stamina factor.
I like what Boss said, and my opinion on it. Like, I like both guys. I'm kind of an old time mindset in regards to me being loyal to teams and fighters, and I've been watching Eddie for a long time. I love what Conor does. I'm a big Conor fan. Like. If Conor wasn't fighting Nate two fights ago, I would have cheered for Conor. But once again, I've been watching Nate for about 10, 12 years. Same thing with Eddie. I think the Underground King, Eddie, wins that fight. People were saying Conor, if Eddie could get through the first two rounds, he'll win. I'm thinking that is the case. But if Conor...
Eddie's got explosive Conor, too.
That's what I'm saying, man. If Conor doesn't be... Eddie can knock him out early. He was a 2-3-1 dog against RDA. No one expected Dos Anjos to get finished in that first round. And Eddie brought it to him.
That's true.
And his style was brutal. He's not the most technical with his strikes. They come from a bunch of angles. Watch that knockout of RDA. That left hook, right hook, that duck, the body shot. He is a savage. But Conor's a dangerous animal. Conor's special. Conor has that power and one punch sort of thing as well. It's going to be an exciting fight. If I were putting my money on it, I probably would take Conor. My heart, I would pick Eddie.
Yeah, because Eddie's got, you know, everything. He doesn't really have a lot to lose.
That's it.
That's the scary thought, that everyone expects him to lose. So realistically, if he wins, he can become an absolute superstar of the sport. Because it's still growing, the sport of UFC, and the profiles are getting bigger and bigger. So Conor uses Conor as a way of launching his own brand, because literally it is more of an American sort of fan base that he's got at the moment. Now, if he beats Conor McGregor, it's Conor spreads all around the world. But, you know, I think the UFC at the same time, Conor's going to be taking a little bit of time off. So at the end of the day, they might want Eddie to win, because they want to... Because Conor's become... I couldn't believe that they're still letting him keep his belt, because he hasn't really fought there in two fights. And they've had an interim fight for the other one. I think it's time that, you know, Conor will never make that weight, in my opinion, again. Like, it looks like he'll have to kill himself to make that weight again.
Yeah.
I think, where's he fighting now? 155.
155.
Yeah, I think when 155 is a little bit more natural, because when you think 170, he didn't really have abs against Diaz. So cut out all the water weight. 15 pounds for a guy like Conor is pretty easy to make weight. So.
Guys, I totally agree on that. If you want to see some exciting fights, man, YouTube Michael Chandler, Bellator's champ, versus Eddie Alvarez. They fought a few different times. Bloodbaths. You want to see the heart of a champion, watch those fights. Michael Chandler, Eddie Alvarez, the Underground King. And I posted that on my wall a few days ago. A lot of new MMA fans are Conor fans, and that's fine. But a lot of these fans really aren't historians of the sport or know who an Eddie Alvarez is. And Eddie is dangerous.
Yeah. The second one, I think styles make fights. And I think Wonderboy style is going to be terrible for Woodley.
Terrible as in good for Stephen?
Yeah, good for Stephen. I think Stephen knocks him out two rounds.
I don't think the MMA world has ever seen a striker at this level as dominant in mixed martial arts as Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Wonderboy throws his front kick as a jab. Like, what he does is hit, because he was, his karate, his, it was 57-0.
Kickboxer?
Undefeated American kickboxer, 57-0. What he does with that left front kick, the side kick, is look how he just totally neutralized Johnny Hendricks, a former welterweight champion, and dismantled him.
Made him look like a little baby, dude.
Yeah, Wonderboy's only loss was right when he came in a few years back to Matt the Immortal Brown, another Vision Board alum, but he was young then, and Wonderboy's more seasoned, he's been in some great fights. I think the thing is, though, here, the power is a great equalizer. It's the great equalizer, and Tyron probably feels that he could take Steven's best kick or best punch, and he's going to
throw him, you reckon?
He's going to have to do that to cut that distance.
Probably,
because Wonderboy's long and tall, and he fights tall.
Yeah.
But Tyron, what I vision is Tyron ducking, cutting that distance in half. He's going to have to try to get Wonderboy's back against that cage and then do exactly what he did to Lawler, which shocked me as well. But now we know Tyron's capable of it. And more importantly, Tyron believes in himself because he's a champion now. Yeah. And a beautiful thing happens when you get these guys who are always great. When they become champions,
they start believing.
They start believing themselves, and nothing's more dangerous than that guy.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So it's gonna be a great fight. I still think that Thompson is due, and I think that style.
It's his time.
Yeah, I think it's his time. But in saying that, like you said, Woodley is a tank.
Mm.
Someone's gonna be able to take his shot.
He's probably
gonna
be a great wrestler. Don't sleep on it. I mean, will styles make fights? Maybe Woodley faint. I'm thinking as soon as that fight starts, Wonderboy's gonna control the center of the octagon. Get Woodley's back against the cage. Woodley's probably going to faint left and go for a single leg or a double leg for the takedown. And I think the fight ends. I think Wonderboy's on his back in the first minute. And I think that's how Woodley wins.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think he's willing. I think he's going to have to be willing to take a couple to give and get him down on the ground.
Yeah, the third one we didn't get to actually go through with Boss was the Romero and Weidman fight.
Yeah, because Boss, it's not for the belt. And Boss was under the, you know, he's getting asked a lot. And everyone's talking about those three belt fights. But you're right.
I think a fight like that is the sixth on the card, I think it is, from the main event.
Did you see the Fox Sports card?
Yeah, it's crazy.
The FS1, who's on that card?
Who's on that one?
Jeremy Stevens versus...
this is Frankie.
Frankie.
And Misha's on there too, isn't she?
Misha is on that card. I wish I had the internet right now. We should bring it up. But the whole card is ridiculous.
Would you think that maybe that fight's going to depend on how Chris is... repaired himself? Like, he's had a fair few injuries over the last 12 months.
It wasn't even the last, his whole career, man. The guy's really been hit with the injury bug his whole career. He's only fought, I think, 12 times.
He's 30.
But, you know, he was a college wrestler, grinder, man. He's had he's had multiple knee surgery, shoulders. He's only fought MMA fights 12. I'm pretty sure he's 11-1. He would be undefeated if he didn't do that spinning shit against Luke, but Luke made him pay.
That's true.
I think that Chris is a guy that is a champion who lost his belt, who wants his belt back. I think Chris is the most dangerous he's ever been, and I think he's going to finish Romero.
Very close to probably the best record in the UFC. When you think about who's taken out huge Anderson Silva twice.
And he's got thrown in the... Yeah, I mean,
I know who you're talking about.
2 years ago...
he's taken out Vitor.
Belfort.
He's taken out... who's the karate guy?
Machida. Yep. Everybody. Vitor was a champ. Machida was a champ. Anderson was the greatest of all time.
That's crazy.
You know, his only loss was a Luke. Luke is a champ. And Romero is, you know, his body's a tank. As, you know, our boys back.
He also spoke to the BJJ guy, the guy that's been taking out Carlos Condit and Matt Brown. What's his name?
Maya. That was at 185.
Yeah.
Maya dropped down to 170, and that's a whole different animal.
Mm.
No one wants to go in his world.
Yeah, it's not a good guy to be firsting. Guys, I hope you really enjoyed the Bas Rutten episode. Just remember to share it with your friends on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever platform you're on. Also, remember to subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher. Leave us a quick 5-star review. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, guys, go to our website, www.thevisionboardpodcast.com/onit. Check out a sponsor of the show, Onit. They're bringing you Total Human Optimization products. They got everything from Dolce Way. They got some greens. They got MCT oil, Alpha Brain, New Mood, Shroom Tech. They got merchandise, gear, training equipment. The kettlebells are really popular. I'm fascinated with the steel mace. I'm not saying I'm falling in love with it, but being from a baseball background, the shoulder mobility, and they got a bunch of videos on it, looks pretty interesting. When you're going through the checkout, use keyword vision board to receive 10% off of all of your purchases. Also, when you're on our website, check out our newest, latest product, soon to be released.
The Fitboard. Yeah, guys, check it out. We're going to be releasing it probably in a month or so. We just keep delaying it because we're just waiting for the right time. But it's going to be a program, training program online. You're going to be mentored and coached by myself and Johnny. 10-week transformation program. We're looking to get you, you know, in the best shape of your life, both mentally and physically. Before you do that, you probably want to download our ebook. So check it out. It's on the homepage of the Vision Board Podcast website, or it's also on www.thevisionboardpodcast.com/ebooks. Quick little ebook on our abs routine and also a sample diet. So you just guys get a little bit of an insight on what's expected coming up. But it's a free download, and you also get on the newsletter list. So when we bring out different episodes, you'll be the first to find out.
Yeah, guys, if you like the Bas Rutten episode, if you go back, if you've been listening to the show since Jump, we really appreciate it. We love the love and support. If you haven't, we've had on the show Matt Brown, Carlos Condit. We've had on Michelle Waterson, Alex Chambers, we've had on Abel Trujillo. The list goes on and on. World champion Stipe Miocic. How do I forget Cleveland's own? So we like getting a nice mix of world champion athletes, because guess what it takes to be a world champion? A mindset. We also like talking to gentlemen who've achieved a certain level of success in business and entrepreneurship, millionaire mindset, and then as well the coaching is what we're really interested in as well, because those are the suits that Tristan and I both wear. So check those episodes out, SoundCloud, iTunes, Vision Board Podcast, 5-star rating. We would love to you to like and share. Support the cause.
Cheers, guys. So we really appreciate you tuning in, and we'll see you soon.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working hard at it. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and, you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are 2 for 2.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.